I am Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and anybody can be great except us.
Well, we
We're
try.
We're just moderately mediocre.
Any resemblance of being great is purely coincidental and was never meant to harm anyone.
That's right.
That's it.
So there.
Anyway, joining us is Mr. Tony Foster.
Tony Foster.
I almost got it wrong.
From NASA.
NASA.
Wow, we're up to our eyeballs in rocket scientists around here. I love this stuff.
Yeah, you know, there have been other times I felt like that, like when I'm in a traffic jam in Philly.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a bunch of rocket scientists we got here.
Well, these are the real
deal. Yeah.
They know how to light the fuse.
And he's going to talk to us about ELTs, which are sandwiches, correct?
Right, yes.
The elephant ear, lettuce, and tomato?
There it is. One of my favorites. Actually,
that's not quite correct, is it?
We all know what it stands for. Emergency landing transmitter. It's one of those.
Landing transmitter? How about locating?
Locating.
Emergency locator transmitter.
Yeah,
so
wow.
Everybody knows what it is but me.
Exactly. And they're used to locate emergencies, right?
That's right, yeah. We're here in the NASA tent this week because we're trying to get a couple messages across about ELTs. There's a lot of pilots here. All of them pretty much have ELTs on their planes, but there's a few different kinds. There's a older 121.5 megahertz ELT, and then there's a newer 406 megahertz ELT. And so there's two messages we're trying to get out this week. The first one is probably the most important. If you have the 121.5 megahertz ELT on your plane and it's just a 121.5, the satellites that detect these distress signals no longer see that signal. And
so it's useless.
It's not completely useless, but it's pretty close
pretty
in our
darn.
Opinion. Yeah.
Response times go way up.
That's right. The 406 signal became the prime signal about 10 years ago. So the first message is, if you've got a 121 only ELT on your plane, you really need to switch it out with a 406 if you want it to save your life.
Well, the 406 is a much more sophisticated ELT as well.
The 406, actually the 406 frequency is protected internationally around the world for just this distress purpose. And when it goes through the satellite system and down to the ground, to rescue forces, it kicks in a response immediately to send somebody to come find you. And
do all the 406 ELTs have GPS capability?
They don't all have it, but the majority of those sold on the market today, if you went to buy a new one, they do have it. And so that GPS capability is basically puts the GPS location on the 406. When we receive it, we have that GPS position instantly, and that, of course, helps.
Do you have the ability to also send aircraft identification information?
We do.
Like an N number or something?
That's right. When you register your ELT, you put all that information in the registration database. And so when that message comes in, we see who it belongs to, what the aircraft information is, and everything's in there.
And they come get you quick.
That's right.
That's the idea, quick.
You know, and also that brings to mind a point. You have to train the pilots that the best way is to stay with the airplane because that's where the ELT is.
If the airplane's in a safe configuration,
right, a stable, yeah,
that's right. A lot of pilots carry the portable version of the ELT, which is a few hundred dollars, and they put it in their pocket in case they want to leave the aircraft, and they can take it with them. It does the exact same thing.
That was the one question I had. I wanted to know if any of these devices, like Spot, I think is one of them. You know, if you recommend that pilots carry one of these as well.
Yeah, so Spot and 406 ELTs have very different purposes. A Spot device, of course, allows for tracking, and an ELT or a PLB 406 device does not. However, a Spot device does not work with the International COSPAR-SAR-SAT network. It doesn't kick off that immediate response. And another thing that people don't know is when you have any other service that you sign up for distress.
Like SpiderTracks or something.
Like SpiderTracks or others where you have to have somebody come rescue, a lot of times you have to pay a very heavy bill for that rescue.
Oh, wow.
With the COSPAR-SAR-SAT network, there's no fee for having the beacon or for using it.
Right. So you're saying that those other beacons do not kick off the National Search and Rescue Network, if you want to call it that.
They can kick off a rescue, but it's not the same automated response that you get with the COSPAR-SAR-SAT system.
Okay. Now, let's say, I have a crash, I'm okay, the airplane's here, and I want to leave the airplane because it's on a mountainside, whatever. So I toddle on down and I activate my PLB. Now you have two signals to figure out. Do you automatically link the PLB belongs to this aircraft, so we're going to ignore the aircraft one, this one, and we're going to go after the PLB?
We don't ignore any. So basically, whether it's Mountain Rescue or the Coast Guard, the Air Force, whoever's doing the rescue, if there's a PLB or an ELT going off, they find each and every one of them.
Okay.
And they don't stop looking until they find it. Now, with registration, you can register both of those beacons for the same person. So when they get both, they'll say, okay. They'll put the two together and say it's an ELT and a PLB. They're both for the same person, and it will help.
Well, okay. What about the ELT? What about if you have to abandon the aircraft? What about grabbing the ELT and taking it with you?
There are some ELTs that are also portable, so you can take them out of their mount. They have an antenna built in. But if they're not that portable version, then disconnecting it from the antenna pretty much renders it useless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Unless you have a coat hanger in your pocket.
Well, that was one thing I was wondering. Do they have the portable models? Obviously, they do.
They do.
What kind of cost are we talking about on these?
It ranges. For ELTs, I've seen anywhere from $500 to a couple thousand. Depends on what features you want inside the beacon. The smaller version, personal locator beacons that you put in your pocket, those range from $250 to $350 for those versions.
Do these 406s still emit 121.5? And the reason I ask that is my flight instructor always said it's good practice when you land, flip over to 121.5, make sure you haven't activated your ELT inadvertently.
Yeah, they all have 121.5. 121.5 is a requirement for beacons in the United States. So you can find them with the 406, and then when you get close enough, you can direction find on the 121.5 to get the rest of the way in.
Now, of course, if the 406 is giving you GPS coordinates, it's a lot quicker.
It's a lot quicker. That's right.
Well, that's the one you hold out for then.
That's right.
And you find a portable version of it just in case you have to be on the move.
Sure. Yeah. So that's the one big message I think that we're trying to share first. The second one is just to educate the public about what NASA does for search and rescue.
Okay.
We've been part of the search and rescue program since it started for COSPA-SARSAT. This is back in the late 70s. And we're basically the technical arm for the Coast Guard and Air Force for search and rescue in the United States. So we develop the technology that goes into these beacons.
Right, but you're not actually involved in orchestrating the rescues.
We are not.
You're the brains behind the system.
We design the pieces of the system, the beacons, the space segment, the ground systems that receive it. And we work with our partners, Coast Guard, Air Force, and NOAA. NOAA is the actual operational agency.
So the... you piggyback onto what satellites? The NOAA satellites? The GPS satellites?
Both, actually.
Okay.
So it started originally with low Earth orbiting satellites, which were NOAA satellites and others around the country. And now we've gone to a new system. We call it medium Earth orbit, which is the GPS constellation. There's also Galileo in Europe and other GNSS constellations. And so what that really means for the beacons now is near instantaneous detection. So if you set a 406 off outside today, there could be 6 to 10 GPS satellites that see you instantly. They bounce the signal down to the ground, and it starts everything in motion.
Okay.
Now, one of the other things, you were saying that this frequency is protected internationally. So you're saying that my ELT will work anywhere in the world?
Anywhere in the world. If you buy it in the U.S., you can use it in South Africa. If you're in the middle of the Indian Ocean, then whoever sees your signal in that region will kick off a rescue and come find you.
Okay. And do the satellites themselves, are they what perform the initial triangulations?
They're not, actually. So for the GPS constellation, the instruments on board are simple repeaters. They just bounce it down to the ground, and the calculations and algorithms in the ground system is what does all the math.
Oh, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
I don't know how these guys figure this stuff out.
I don't know either, but I love it.
Yeah. It was a scientist at NASA Goddard Space Flight Center and a scientist in Russia in the late 70s that decided, let's try to detect these from space.
Wow.
And that's what started the program.
Couple of cool guys.
Yeah, and either their bosses didn't know about it because they would have said, what are you wasting time on that for?
Yeah, they actually did. It was actually a peacekeeping effort at the end of the Cold War to try to do this effort. And since the first save in 1982, there have been over 45,000 rescues around the world.
Wow.
That's a lot. Stop getting into so much trouble, yes, everybody.
I saved the world, and I needed saving again.
And again.
So if you have an ELT, if you're thinking about putting an ELT on your plane, we also have a lot of guidance on how to install it correctly. That's the last thing we're doing here. We're trying to get our recommendations out to the public. We did a long study. We crashed a few planes to try to figure out how these systems might fail. and we have a lot of guidance on how you can best install it. So come by NASA tent and see
right.
it.
Wait a minute. You crashed a couple of these airplanes? Who was the pilot? Who'd volunteer for that?
I volunteered, but they wouldn't let me.
They offered the job to, they would have offered the job to us had they known.
Yeah, no kidding. This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And Tony Foster from NASA is joining us, and you're in the NASA Pavilion.
That's right.
I don't know why they call it a pavilion. It's really a building.
It is. It's a big
pavilion's a little thing with just little flowers.
You know,
and
a pavilion is a building with style.
Oh, there it is.
And it's a pavilion.
Okay. And it's full of really smart people. But that's
yes,
not important
is.
Right
that's
now.
That's not important, right?
All right.
Sorry, we're going into the old airplane shtick again.
Yep.
It's hard not to.
This is Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.